Alright, welcome to Discovery 1, Bridge Lecture 2, I think. Yeah, 3. Bridge Lecture 3, even. So it's Discovery 1, Bridge Lecture 3. Now, did everybody get my email on Cavi Announce about confirming what fees they've paid and stuff? We need everybody to do that, and we know some of you don't have to pay fees, but all the people who did, we need you to confirm that that actually happened. So let us, if you get to that in the next day or so, that would be really good. And you can send that information to Cavi Instructors. Even if we know you paid, you just let us know that you did and we'll all be happy. Okie dokie. And the sign now says lecture in progress. So welcome to lecture 3. Now, anybody got any questions from last week's lecture? Because, I vaguely remember what I talked about last week. It was sort of networky stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Anybody got any questions from last week's lecture, or has anybody got any questions?
What was the basic things you covered last time?
To be honest with you, Dean, you'd have to download the audio and find out. I can't remember.
Basic setting up of a router, I think, for memory, and I too have to download it again and listen to it.
Yeah, if you pull that list of stuff off the Announce archives, there's a message that says bridging to the Discovery 2, and you read the sections that that are mentioned in that note, you'll find I pulled all of my information from there. Although the lecture is more interesting and does sort of talk about some more things over and above that, so you probably want the lecture anyway.
Oh yeah, good. Yeah, I'll grab that this afternoon.
We're not allowed to do it during the lecture, are we?
We'd prefer you didn't, because otherwise I'll start going like this, and then you'll all complain and go, "You're breaking up."
Yes, I'll leave it till later. I got my ITs down last night, but that's good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that all went fairly well. We've just finished module 2 in ITE 2, which is always good. And all that sort of stuff. Okay, today we're talking about all sorts of things. I've been doing the notes for this over the last couple of days, and today we're talking about wireless and security. If you've done ITE 1 and you've already experienced Geraldine's security module, then try not to gnaw your arms off during this one, because it's essentially the same material. Okay, so, and then we get to that in a minute.
But very important.
Oh, it's certainly very important. Very important. It just depends on how much you remember from the last time through we went. If you don't remember anything from the last time through, pay attention, because it'll be something that you will need to know. And as a good network design / engineer person-y person, you should probably know something about security, or managers will get rather cranky with you. Oh, Ronnie. So let's get started on today's material. Okay. Benefits of wireless. Can people tell me, one at a time, perhaps some of the benefits of having a wireless network?
You can sit out on your front patio or back patio and get on the internet.
You can, because usually your phone...
Cables.
Usually your back patio doesn't have a phone socket on it, unless you've got an unusual back patio. So yes, you can sit on your back patio and get on the internet, and less needed for wireless. Yes, another advantage of wireless networking.
Saving to having to run cables everywhere.
Yep, that's definitely another advantage. And can anybody think of another one?
Privacy from your annoying housemates.
That certainly can be an advantage, although obviously the vanadium steel doors will be put in at a later date. What's another advantage of wireless networking? Think simple, people. What's something that people like about wireless networks?
I'll be able to sit on the terrace in Darwin and do my lecture in 2 weeks from it.
Well, that's good, as long as it doesn't pour rain and you sort of end up having to tread water while you're listening to the lecture.
Well, a terrace being an upmarket word for my auntie's front porch, and there won't be any rain because it's going to be dry season. Yay!
Excellent. Okay, can anybody think of this other advantage of setting up wireless networking? It's a pretty simple one. I assume most people haven't read Chapter 7 yet.
Mobility.
Mobility. Yes, that's certainly one of the advantages of wireless networks. There's one more I'm looking for, and I'll throw it out there once more. Before. No, that's not an advantage. It's expensive to do wireless in its own way. Not cost.
Yeah, I suppose.
Depends on how big the cell is. If you've got multiple access points, it gets pricey pretty quick. I'm going to have to tell you, they're quick to set up. In other words, that you just flick all the things on and press all the buttons and off they go.
Unless you happen to be a friend of mine.
What, does being your friend mean it takes longer to set up wireless networks, does it, Elise?
Well, I would say so. I got a barrage of abuse from a friend of mine last night, not directed at me, complaining that he couldn't get on with his Triple E PC that, and I'm not talking about Will, by the way, with his Triple E PC that he stole Linux off from another computer, so all the settings are all completely wrong. And I said, well, did you do the simple things like take the security off your network first, then see if you can make a connection?
Well, the reason he couldn't get on with his Triple E PC, and I know who you're talking about, and we won't mention who it is because you need a specific Atheros wireless driver, and you need to compile it up from source, and that's just how it is on the EE PC. So get over it. But that's, you actually have to compile the wireless driver up from the particular snapshot on from the Mad Wi-Fi project.
I might talk to him about that over the weekend. Thank you for that. But, yes, in general, if he'd been running Windows or something, he would have just been able to turn it on and get onto the network.
Well, maybe. It's not quite that simple, and we'll talk about that in a bit. But it can be that
relatively
easy.
Relatively speaking.
Well, it depends. I mean, have you ever tried setting up a D-Link wireless card?
Yeah.
This is actually a Linksys, and I would have thought that we have to say Linksys always works.
I disagree. but we'll get to that presently. But yes, you actually do need to get a particular snapshot for the EPC because there is actually a modified hardware abstraction layer, and you can read about that on eeeuser.com, just in case anybody who's listening to the lecture and wants to know how to get the Atheros wireless going on their EEE PC. That's where you can look it up. So eeeuser.com, and it's now the official Triple E support resource. That's how we got ours going. Okay. All right, we're talking about wireless networks. Can people give me some examples of types of wireless technology? And I'm not after answers like the FM radio at this point. I'm talking about computer wireless technologies.
802.11 standard?
Yeah, that's one.
There's an A.
Infrared.
B, yeah, Bluetooth, infrared, A, B, C, N, N's about to come out if it hasn't already, isn't it? 802.11n?
And Bluetooth and infrared were the other two examples I wanted. And we've all seen all those pictures of the electromagnetic spectrum that has all of the different wavelengths, and then you've got sound at the bottom, and then you've got all the long waves, and then you've got AM, and then FM, and then UHF, and crud, 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 and then all the way up to microwaves and X-rays and all that sort of funky stuff. Well, if you don't know about that, it's in the diagram descriptions for Chapter 7. And we did go through it all in CCNA1, so that's the electromagnetic spectrum, and these electromagnetic waves turn up at different places in the spectrum.
There's GSM and 3G for mobile phones, if that counts.
And CDMA.
And HSDPA.
That's right. And CDMA stands for Consumers Don't Matter Anyway. I mean, it stands for Carrier Division Multiple Access. And it's one of the mobile standards that was supposed to work in the bush and doesn't very well. So there you go, that's what we tried to go for in Australia and it wasn't very successful. Okay, can anybody tell me? Okay, so we're now talking about infrared. Limitations for infrared.
Line of sight.
Slow and you need line of sight.
Okay, I had a wise quip to come out with there, but I'll save that for later. But that's correct, slow and line of sight, and we're only talking about a couple of megabits is the maximum transmission speed for high-speed infrared. Line of sight, what's one of the things that infrared won't do very well?
Work.
I was actually going to say go through walls, but anyway.
My experience with infrared was never that good.
Well, you have to line the two things up, which is a bit difficult if you can't see, to be honest, and it is a bit funky. You've really got to get the two things on the same level, and generally the infrared on laptops is only good for about 3 metres. Yeah, except for when you don't want it to. When you don't want it to connect, it just picks up the other device, no problems at all. And it's direct access, that's what DA stands for in IRDA, in case you wanted to know. Infrared direct access. I wondered about that. And it's point to point. That's one of the key issues with infrared. That said, there is some cool things about infrared. A lot of the infrared transmitters that you get in laptops and stuff are actually quite versatile. And if you install Lurk, which is the Linux infrared control, you can then load it up with all of the codes for your favourite remote controls and control things all over the house with your Linux box.
Are you a bit of a lurker, Kerry?
Sorry?
Are you a bit of a lurker?
Definitely. Okay, the wireless LANs 802.11 blah, A, B, G, and N. N, which is still in draft, and A, B, and G, which are out there, which stands for bag, if you put it around the right way. Okay, so, can anybody tell me what band the wireless networks work on?
2.4 gigahertz.
Yeah, 2.4.
Is that for BNG?
Except A, which works on 5 gigahertz.
Yes, A does work on 5 gigahertz. It is the different one. And can anybody tell me what is wrong with the wireless? What's special about the 2.4 gigahertz band? Can anybody tell me?
Used by a lot of current cordless phones as well.
Yeah, what's the official name for it? Non-licensed band or something, whereas Dean says it's used by mobile phones and your microwave will interfere with it. Your Foxtel retransmitting box around your house might interfere with it.
Yes, the Industrial, Scientific and Medical Band, or the ISM band, is the unlicensed band that all this stuff works on. And Bluetooth also works at 2.4 gigahertz. And Bluetooth being a personal area networking standard, generally supposed to work over 10 metres. And if you've got one of those dongles that claims 100 metres, then you're obviously standing out in a paddock somewhere, because it certainly isn't going to go 100 metres if there's anything in the way. So that's Bluetooth. But yes, industrial, scientific and medical. And yes, leaky microwaves will interfere with it. Cordless phones will interfere with it. Bluetooth will interfere with it. And AV senders, because, well, really, Elise, and this is what Foxtel would like you to do, you should be paying the license for another LNB to go in the other room in the house. You shouldn't want to send it for free, you see.
Naughty, naughty, naughty. I certainly wouldn't do that.
That's right. That's right. Particularly when they said that they wouldn't put the PowerPoint in this room because the outlet for it in this room, because they claimed I might have body corporate problems. So bad luck for Telstra.
Exactly.
If they'd done what I asked, I would have moved the box and put it in my room, because it would be a far more efficient way of doing it.
This is indeed the case, but they would love you to pay, you know, a couple of licenses, because obviously one person can watch two things at once. But yes, if everybody wants to watch the same thing, yes, you all run out and buy these 2.4 gigahertz wireless video audio senders and then wonder why they smash your wireless network.
Which is why there's probably one for grabs if anyone wants to buy mine.
And we do not advertise things from students. But yes, you can talk to Elise about that. And then if nobody decides they want it, you can always put it in the prize pool, which is what we do with all of our old crusty things. But hopefully somebody will buy it off you before that proves necessary.
Wouldn't even know what to ask for it, to be honest.
Yeah, they're still worth a bit, actually, but, yeah, they're not bad. Okay, so industrial, scientific and medical band, A, working on 5 gigahertz, B, G and N working on 2.4 gigahertz, although there is a subset of N that also runs on the 5 gigahertz band. Okie dokie. All right, can anybody tell me the top speed for B wireless?
11 megabit per second.
Mm-hmm. 11 megabits per second. But can anybody tell me something fundamental about wireless communications that you must always keep in mind?
Is it that it's 50% lossy or 50% accurate?
It is 50% lossy. Yes. What else is something that's why would it be 50% lossy?
Because it uses collision avoidance rather than the collision detection. Collision detection.
That is true, but I was thinking more something a bit simpler, and that is that it's only half duplex.
Mm-hmm. I think Chris was trying to say something too.
That it's a theoretical maximum speed, and in the real world, you'd never get that much.
That's right. It is a theoretical maximum speed, and in the real world... Well, this is an interesting point, actually, because you do actually get the 11 megabits per second, but it's a case of bandwidth versus throughput. So there you go. Alrighty. So, that's pretty good. And can anybody tell me the speed of G?
54 megabits.
That's what I was going to say. It's either 50 or 54, and I couldn't remember which.
There we go. Isn't MSN so very stable on dial-up? Okay. Isn't MSN very stable, full stop, come to think of it? Okay. Now, when you read through these chapters, there are these little exercises. And you've got to decide what sort of... For example, this is one that just asks you what sort of technology are the people using. Are they using IRDA, wireless, Bluetooth or CDMA? And we'll just go through a couple of those and see if you guys can figure out which one they're using. They're so incredibly difficult, so here we go. Okay, Zoe's checking her email at the airport.
Mm-hmm.
Which technology is she using?
Wireless?
Some type of mobile phone technology, 3G, Next G, or even CDMA.
Well, I'd be tempted to go for wireless because that's the answer they want here. But yeah, you're right, you can do networky over the phones as well. It didn't say Zoe with her mobile phone, and it wasn't the Zoe that we know who would be checking out on her mobile phone. This is a generic Zoe that is no relation to the other one.
with a MSN as long as your arm, yeah? MSN list as long as your arm, yeah?
Okay, and Sheldon is wearing his earpiece so that he can listen and receive calls hands-free. What's he doing that with?
Bluetooth, obviously.
Okay, George and Cleo sit side-by-side at the park playing chess on their PDAs together. The first thing that occurs to me is...
Lizards!
But what are they using?
Infrared.
They are indeed. Okay, Suzanne is apparently wearing headphones, and her CD player is three floors up in her bedroom, and she's down in the basement using her headphones to listen to music. So what would she be using to do that? And I don't think I agree with the answer to this one, but we'll see what they think we should be using.
I'd go with an FM transmitter.
Yeah, that's probably what she is using, but it's not. It's got to be IRDA, Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, or CDMA. I think they're actually after Bluetooth, but I don't think the Bluetooth would get through three floors.
Neither do I. And before mentioned, friend has a pair of wireless headphones, but I'm not sure what it uses. I should ask them.
Yes, and they probably don't work very well if he's got anything to say about it.
they're good enough for his bedroom. That'll do.
Well, it's about the distance they have to go. The other thing I'd point out here is it's all very well and good for her to listen to music three floors up in her bedroom with her CD player. I'd be wondering, however, how is she going to skip to the next track? But I suppose that hasn't occurred to her yet.
Long arms.
Lots of exercise to climb the stairs.
Yeah, Frederick is apparently connecting three wireless devices to his desktop. What technology is Fred using?
He's connecting what to his desktop?
Three wireless devices. It doesn't say what they are. But I'd give you a clue. It's not Bluetooth.
I'd say he's using wireless.
He is.
Let me see. Conceivably.
Okay, Dominic is changing the channel on his television with his remote control. What's he using?
Radio frequency.
Infrared,
that's right.
He's a couch potato.
With a remote control.
Aren't some remotes RF?
No, remote controls are not RF, they're usually infrared.
What brand is it? I used to sell them at Richard.
Showing your age, Dean. I have a feeling I remember there was once back in the late 70s a TV set that did have an RF remote control because somebody...
No, is it a really expensive brand that we used to sell?
Oh, that you used to sell up north?
No, lost it. I can't remember the brand there.
What about the remote controls you had to run a wire to the TV set with?
Yeah, I was thinking of Norm from the 70s and the Life Bennett commercials, and they even drew in the little cord from his remote control to his telly.
Bose stereos had an RF remote.
Well, all I can say is I remember those cords that go to the television as well. I mean, I still remember Betamax videotapes, but sadly this is a wireless lecture rather than reminisce with Cavi, so let's move on. But no, infrared was the answer we're after.
Yes.
And it's sort of... anyway, so infrared, that way you can bounce it off the dog. If the dog's sort of, in a convenient spot, you can bounce the beam off the dog and still change the channel. And the good thing is the dog doesn't notice.
I'll try that on my auntie's new guide dog when I go there next week.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I always wanted something where you could, like, push the play, the stop, and the recall button at the same time, and it would sort of turn the beam into, like, fry beam, but they haven't come up with a remote control or the batteries that can do that yet. The other thing which is of minor interest to blind people, and we'll just mention it just to be completely out there, is a thing called a TV Be Gone. Which you can get from TV
begone.net.
Yes. And it sends about 300 different signals that are supposed to turn off just about every TV ever made. And if you've ever been stuck in somebody's house with the television blaring away and you don't want to be watching the foot brawl or similar, the TV begone is what you want. And it will use infrared to turn off the television.
It's amazing what can be done in shopping centres with such devices.
I wouldn't know anything about that. Now, wireless networking. Speed and reliability has increased. Well, it depends if you buy D-Link. But definitely, speed and reliability has increased. I remember when we had our first wireless access points back in 2003. They weren't very fast and they weren't very reliable. Okay, scalability. You can add things in to wireless networks. Obviously that's kind of cool, so people like that. Problem is, because you're operating in the unlicensed band, wireless can be interfered with. And a lot of people have found that their cordless phones will interfere with their wireless networks, and vice versa. And also their mobile phones and their Bluetooth will interfere with their wireless network as well, which is why if you're not using the Bluetooth on your phone, you should turn it off or at least set your phone to be hidden so that it is not beaconing. Okay, we're all aware that there are some security concerns inherent in wireless networking. Is anybody aware of the security problems with wireless networks?
Unless you've allocated a security code, it can be easily accessed.
It can indeed.
You can drive around the city and get on other people's internet connections if you're a naughty person.
And such a practice is called war driving, or war walking, or perhaps war busing. And there have been people who have surveyed wireless networks from a plane. So all of these things are possible.
Geez, I didn't think they'd get that far.
No, I haven't been allowed to fly a plane myself, but one does try.
So if you notice a plane circling your house, then you've probably got an unsecured wireless network?
Yeah, that's right. In fact, every time a plane flies over, that means you've got an unsecured wireless network. No, it was actually done as a proof of concept thing. They had a GPS and a wireless sniffer, and they flew over Perth to see how many unsecured wireless networks there were. And there were a few, quite a few. Because you all read the book when you buy new things, don't you? You all read the book and you also read the chapter that talks about securing your wireless network. And the first thing you do, before you even get all the computers to hook to it, is you go and turn on all security and wind up all security like good network administrators. No, most people just plug it in, turn it on, and forget about it. So, yeah, that's all good. Okay, and we'll talk more about security in a minute. Okay, one of the other things to keep in mind about 802.11a is it has a lower range than 802.11bg and supposedly N. Can anybody tell me what the regular quoted figures for the range of 802.11b and G are?
100 metres.
Or how many feet, just because it's written everywhere in the notes?
Is it 384 feet?
300 and something, I think.
328. But you were close.
Yeah, I knew it was 300 or something.
And the quoted range indoors?
Maybe half that if you're indoors and less than half that if you're at Geraldine's house.
Geraldine's not on. She didn't hear that quip. Geraldine's just flogging off her eep. Now the transaction is complete. She'll be back on soon.
Sold it already, has she?
Oh, yeah. There are blind people that swarm like hornets and stuff. There's quite a market for eeps, especially if they've got windows and... Well, this one isn't actually going to a blind person, but there's quite a high level of interest in them, especially if you've done all the hard work to load the adaptive technology and the windows on. The demandability of them goes up quite significantly.
Mm-hmm. No, I was getting more of the point. Why would Geraldine sell it after not having it for so long?
Because she bought an HP Mini Note.
Fair enough.
So before she got rid of the Eep, she had an Eep, an HP laptop, and a MacBook Pro. And she was thinking that three is too many laptops to have. I'm not quite that. I think about 10 is too many laptops to have. But she decided that she didn't want all of them. Eep.
I need a bigger desk, otherwise.
Okay, and we're talking about the range indoors of wireless networks, and I think Elise said something along the range of 50 metres or half that if you're in Geraldine's house. Okay, and can anybody tell me what is one of the things that stops... What are a couple of things that stop wireless signals from going long distances?
Geraldine's house?
Walls.
Walls? Yep, what's another thing that stops them pretty well?
I suppose where you have your... Your
ceilings.
Access point placed?
Ceilings, yes. I was looking more for trees. Trees are a good thing for stopping wireless networks too. So if you've got a tree between you and the person across the street that you want to share your internet with, it's time to get the chainsaw out and chop the tree down. I do not condone that sort of behaviour, but trees do get in the way of wireless signals, and they're very nice and stuff, but not cool for wireless networks. Okay, can anybody tell me with directional antennas, and they say in the notes that gain is the amount of gain that you get when you use various types of antennas, so we're not going to go into that too much. It's a topic we could spend all day talking about. Anybody tell me, give me an idea of the approximate range you can get if you've got the right aerials and a fairly clear line of sight with BG wireless networks?
20K.
The Cisco notes actually say 25 miles or 40 k's.
Yeah, I was thinking more of the lines of what a friend did.
Exactly. They've got some 19 dBi panels and dBi panels and stuff, and they get some quite big long ranges with them. Some quite large point-to-point links, which is quite useful. Okay. Can anybody tell me what is another name for computers that connect to the wireless network? What's their funky name in the 802.11 standard? I'll give you a clue. It rhymes with nation.
Station?
Yes, they're called stations. And can anybody tell me what mode is a wireless network in when it is talking station to station?
Is that peer-to-peer?
Not quite the word I was after, but yes, it is peer-to-peer.
Ad hoc.
That is correct. Ad hoc. Are you still awake there, Gemma?
Yeah.
That's all right. I was just saying whether you were still awake or whether you were... You just closed Ventrilo.
No, I haven't.
Well, that's all right.
I'm still here.
Okay, wireless clients or stations. So we have clients and we have stations. What's another sort of device we can have on a wireless network? And there are a couple more of them. So somebody will come up with a really obvious one.
Wireless access point.
Yes, there are wireless access points, yes.
Wireless bridge.
And wireless bridges. Yes, they're the ones
wireless
we wanted.
Bridges.
I like this dial-up. It slows Chris down so he can't get his answer in first. It's 300 milliseconds behind everyone else. Wireless repeater. Wireless repeater. Okay, it wasn't funny. Okay.
Chris needs some wireless technology.
Have you got any wireless networks around your...
I hate dial-up.
Oh, we know you do. I'm sure a lot of our students hate dial-up too that are out in the country and whatever else. Have you got any wireless networks around the area that you could... how do we say... ensure that they're secure?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, just as an interesting case in point, when we first moved into our flats, we were the only wireless network in the area. Now there are four.
Yes, I should probably do another scan of my area, because you don't think to do it when you're at home, and because, you know, yours works and yours automatically connects every time you switch on your computer, but it's probably worthwhile I go out to the lounge room at some point and have a look and see if there's been any new ones that have come along in my street.
Well, sometimes it can be important to do that, not purely just from a sticky bag perspective, but sometimes if most wireless stuff, generally speaking, defaults to channel 1, and if everything's piled up on channel 1, you might want to actually change the channel and move yourself away from the existing networks.
That's right. That happened to a friend of mine. We actually put it down to some other source interfering with it, but they were travelling along there quite nicely for about 18 months on a wireless LAN that I just left on the default channel when I set it up, and all of a sudden, no wireless access to about three of their laptop PCs, and I had to just basically test them all and find one up the other end of the band somewhere that actually worked for them.
And that is especially true. And one of the things you should do when you do a site survey is have a look and see which channels are actually in use and try and find a clear one. Being aware that channels 1, 5 and 10 are the channels that do not overlap each other. So channels 1, 2, 3 and 4 overlap. 5, 6... Actually, it's 1, 6 and 10 are the ones that do not overlap, so that's worth knowing as well. Although sometimes moving from channel 1 to 2 can make a difference, because there are things that are not wireless networks that are down the bottom of the band. Okay,
now... these channels actually are?
I think they're quite a few megahertz wide, because it uses direct sequence spread spectrum.
No, I just thought it'd be curious to get a chart with the actual frequencies of these channels on them.
Yeah, they're out there. Some of the routers sort of say channel 1, 2.412 GHZ, channel 2, 2.415 GHZ. So there are certainly lists of channels out there. In America, you're allowed to use channels 1 to 11... 1 to 10, sorry. In Europe, you're allowed to use 1 to 11. In Australia, you're allowed to use 1 to 13. And depending on where you are in Japan, you're either allowed to use channels 1 to 13 or channel 14. So it's very important to know what your wireless devices support. And in fact, some of the wireless devices are locked to a specific country, which means if you put all of your access points on channel 11, your default wireless cards won't find them because that isn't in their channel range. And in fact, we had that problem with Gemma's Intel wireless card in her Tekra. It did not want to go onto... Actually, didn't want to go onto channel 13. It was happy to go onto channel 11, but it wouldn't go onto channel 13.
That's interesting, man. I would have thought because it's 802.11g, it was the standard. Wherever there was 802.11g, let's say that's it.
No, it's not. And in fact, different cards will do different things. Often the radio is quite happy to go up onto channel 13 or 14, but often there is either software or firmware that restricts where it can roam. And that's one of the reasons why you have a binary-only HAL for the Atheros Linux wireless driver, because it is a software radio. It can do all sorts of things that the FCC wouldn't like because it is a software-controlled radio.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, can anybody tell me what the funky name for the area that a wireless service, access point serves? There are two names for it.
Wireless range?
No.
My office, my bedroom, my lounge room?
No, there is a funky name for it. Rhymes with
is
hell.
Is it radius?
Nope. As I said, it rhymes with hell. And the answer is cell. Yes. Yes, Mr. Legg came up with it. There we go. Probably stuck with A-E-double-L-B-E-double-L-C-E-double-L. Ooh, cell. Yeah, so there we go. It's a cell. And a cell is also known as a basic service set, or a BSS. So these terms are relatively important. and that is the area that is covered by one cell. So if we want a bigger area covered, we must overlap the cells by approximately 10%, and we must use multiple access points. And if we use multiple access points, that is called an extended service set. Okay. Has anybody got any questions yet? Okay, now 802.11 frames are different to Ethernet frames, so the access point converts between Ethernet and 802.11 frames. In fact, you can have 2,346 bytes in an 802.11 frame, and your average Ethernet frame is... what, anybody know what the average Ethernet frame is? Give or take a few bytes?
1,594.
1,536. Now, wireless networks are given a name, and that name is known as the SSID, or the Service Set Identifier. And it is 1 to 32 alphanumeric characters, and it's the name of your wireless network. So if you connect to a particular wireless network and Windows pops up a balloon and says, "You are now connected to Spanky, signal strength excellent," that is the name of the network that you are connected to. Okay, now, the SSID is transmitted in every frame, and there are some people, for example, who have a hidden SSID, but no encryption turned on. And one of the problems with that is if you are actually watching for the wireless frames, you can decloak the network just by the presence of the frames. You'll actually see what the service set is, and you'll be able to find the network. And then you'll be able to, you know, wander off with all their files and stuff if the security isn't particularly wonderful. The ad hoc networks are called an IBS, which is an independent basic service set, IBSS, and that's what you call an ad hoc network. And in fact, what ad hoc networks do, and this is something worthwhile knowing, is they wander around the frequency band looking for a channel that appears free, and then one of the stations lands on that channel, and then all of the other stations then find the ad hoc network by searching the channel band until they find the one that has the SSID that is the same as all of the other computers. Okay, now if you connect more than one BSS together, you get an ESS, which is an extended service set, and you do that with what we call a distribution system. And the distribution system can either be wireless, as in WDS, or you can do it with cables. And the cables can actually be you can actually cable the access points together, and that is your distribution system. Okay, as Elise pointed out earlier, we use CSMA-CA, which is Carrier Sense Multiple Access with Collision Avoidance. And it uses the CTS, RTS, or Clear to Send, Request to Send method, and the access point is responsible for controlling who can talk on the channel. And that's why you have the access point to coordinate things. Any questions?
Gary, why is there so much variance with a lot of brand wireless routers with the signal strength using the same size aerials?
Because some brands are crap.
Yeah, no, I just noticed that with the between the Billion and this new Draytech router we've got, there's been a big difference.
The Billion wireless isn't particularly marvellous, but they have actually improved the wireless a lot since you bought your Billion. It's still not particularly good, but it's there are just crummy wireless chips out there. There are also cases where the transmit power is fairly low on wireless devices. You can actually turn the transmit power up on the Billions. That said, just some chipsets are better than others, and in fact some JTECs are really good and some JTECs aren't, so it really is, a lot of the time it is the luck of the draw as to what you get, which is why I tend to recommend now that people buy separate wireless access points rather than going for these all-in-one abominations, because what you end up finding is that in a lot of the all-in-ones, just about everything except for one particular thing is good. So you might have good wireless, good Ethernet, and crummy ADSL, or you might have good ADSL, good Ethernet, and crummy wireless. So it's something to be aware of with these all-in-one devices.
Yeah, no, that's a Dragtech, what is it, 2800 VG, that's really good. It's got 7 dBi antennas on it. It's really good coverage.
Yeah, the Dragtechs are a good router, although, as you're probably aware, you will pay for them too. The good Dragtechs $300.
Oh, yeah, this was 330 something or other with the two 7 dB antennas.
Yeah, exactly. And that's something to be aware of, is you do get what you pay for. We've actually moved away from using the integrated wireless due to our network layout, because we actually use the Linux box as the firewall rather than the router itself, because the Linux box is more capable. And we've actually gone and bought Ultra WAPs, which are made... yeah, we didn't hear you, or did you not mic up? Okay, and Geraldine reckons they're pretty cool. They are pretty cool. Have you set yours up yet? Ah, right. Did you get the repeater thing working on it that I emailed you about, or? Oh, excellent. Geraldine's got hers. No, Geraldine got her wireless access point working and forgot to tell me. We sent her instructions on how to get it into universal repeater mode. So now she gets some wireless signal down in her little office. But yes, the Ultra WAPs from freenetantennas.com are quite good, and they're actually a rejiggered mini-tar, and they are a wireless access point, and that is all they are. Although, if you've got lots of money or some very nice people, you can go get a Dragtech or a good Belkin, because some of them aren't too bad. Okay, what are the other things to keep in mind? When you set up your Wi-Fi gear, you have the option of selecting which mode it is going to operate in. One of the modes is B, one of them is G, sometimes it's N, and one of them is mixed mode. And it is worth keeping in mind that if you run your access point in mixed mode, you will decrease the performance of your network.
Handy to know.
Because you have to beacon for both B and G, and there is the overhead in supporting both modes. There are times, however, when you do need to run in mixed mode. We run in mixed mode at home because we don't use the wireless much, but we have it. The PDAs we have only support B wireless, and our laptops support G wireless. Okay. Now, when you are setting up wireless cards, there are a number of utilities you can use. There is the Microsoft Zero Configuration Wireless, which is the one that comes with Windows XP Service Pack 1 and greater. And there is the vendor-supplied utilities. Beware the vendor-supplied utilities. Some of them are excellent, like the Atheros wireless utilities and the Roamabout wireless utilities, and some of them are an abomination on the face of accessibility, and they include the D-Link wireless one, the Netgear wireless one, and the Linksys.
I think my laptop came with an Intel one or something. I have to check that.
Oh, the Intel one's all right.
Yeah, I looked at it. I haven't actually made any changes by using it, so I use the Microsoft one, but yeah, it looks like it can tell you do a lot more.
Oh, well, this is the other point too. Did you want to move enable? One of the things you'll find is that the vendor utilities, in fact, pre-SP3, Windows did not support WPA2 out of the box. And you actually had to go and download a special Microsoft hotfix that would give you the WPA2 support. It only supported WPA and WEP. So, something to be aware of. SP3, however, does add WPA2 support into Windows Zero Configuration Wireless, which is somewhat handy. But yes, often the vendor tools do a lot more. They often have site survey utilities. In fact, a lot of them can log signal strengths at a predetermined time interval. I know the Atheros one can, and the Intel one can show you site survey information. And in fact, if I had an Intel wireless card on my laptop, which I do, as a matter of fact, I would actually be using the Intel utility over the Xero configuration wireless, because it is actually quite good and it supports profiles and things which the Windows one doesn't very well.
Cool, and you've got me food for thought later on. I think I'll go and have a play with it.
You want to make sure, though, that you've downloaded the latest Intel wireless drivers for whichever chipset you've got, whether it's the... I can't remember the names of the chipsets now. That's really useful. There's one that comes in the Centrino chips, 2200 or 20, Intel 2200 BG or similar chips, or 2345 or whatever. You do want the latest drivers off Intel for your chip, which has the latest configuration utilities in them as well, because they often fix a lot of problems. We had one, for example, that whenever we shut our laptops down, there would be a process that would hang and stop the laptop from shutting down, and it turned out to be one of the Intel preset for wireless connections, and when we updated the drivers, that problem went away. So I'd say some other people... oh dear, guys, it was on the announce. Today's is CCNA Discovery, and it's about Module 7, which is wireless networks, and Module 8, which is internet security. Because we did Module 5 last week, so that's what today's class is about. Alrighty, attacks on wireless networks. They're pretty easy to do because you don't need any wires, obviously, because they're wireless. And you can do it from a distance. You can be sitting down the street in that hotted-up sports car and use your laptop to obtain access to somebody's wireless network. Although I would prefer that most of the members of this class did not get in hotted up sport cars, as long as they're not driving them.
How about a creepy old van?
Well, you could get in a creepy old van if that's more your style, Chris. It probably would be. But as long as you're not driving... You've got no audio. You just went click, clunk, click, clunk. Yeah. We can't hear Geraldine.
What about now? What I had said, Chris, was a creepy vehicle for creepy Chris.
My dad's old van was great. I used to drive that around.
It's really good. They all get paranoid now, Chris, because I think you're ignoring them, but they don't realise you're on dial-up, so there's a bit more of a lag. So there's this little tension as well as they're waiting for the comeback. Okay, now, one of the things you can do... Okay, so here we go, and now we're talking about how to secure our wireless networks. One of the first methods of security you can use is a hidden SSID. In other words, don't broadcast the existence of your wireless network to the neighbourhood. This, however, has problems. Can anybody tell me one of the problems with a hidden SSID? One of the minor problems for a hidden SSID.
You have to go through and set up your connection manually.
That's one of the problems. And what piece of information do you need to even be able to connect to the wireless network?
You need to actually know the SSID. The exact spelling and whatnot.
Exactly. You have to know the exact spelling, and you have to know what the SSID is to begin with. Okay, the other thing you want, possibly if you are the security conscious type, is MAC address filtering, and that means you can put the MAC addresses of the stations that should be able to access the network, and you can then put those into the table, and the router can either allow or deny access. However, it is possible to spoof a MAC address, but most normal people aren't into that sort of thing, so you don't tend to have too many problems from that, but it is possible. The other win is to change the default settings. A lot of people have the default password on their router. Guess what? There are lists out on the internet of default usernames and passwords for all the different models of router.
Yeah, just go into whirlpool.com.
.au.
Yeah.
It's .net.au, otherwise you get the washing machines.
Yes, there is one on whirlpool.net.au, and there are also other ones on things like Seattle Wireless and various other places. What's another really simple way you can stop people of turning to getting onto your access point? This one's really simple.
Switch it off.
That's right, switch it off when you're not using it. We actually had one of my... somebody we know who's a lawyer, and she was jumping onto an unprotected wireless network in the group of flats that she lived in, and we pointed out to her that this was actually stealing. And she's like, oh, but they left it open. And I said, yes, you're just saying that because you want a free wireless network and internet connection, but it's still stealing. And she said, it's not fair because I'm in the middle of doing something, and then they turn the access point off. I said, well, tough. It's not your access point. You don't get to say whether it's on or not. So she sort of had to concede that that was certainly the case. It is illegal to access an access point if it is not advertised as open. The law does not see it as finders, keepers, losers, weepers. It certainly sees it as a problem if you just associate with an access point that is not meant to be open and start using somebody else's internet access. And it's... Sorry, you had your microphone open there, Dean. I thought you were going to say something.
No, no, sorry, just exit.
The other thing to keep in mind is that if you do this, and especially in Australia where you've got limited gigabytes or whatever, so say you're, you know, say generic old lady is on a 300 megabyte Big Pond plan, and she's got a wireless network, you could use up 200 of her 300 megs, and she might not be very happy about that, because she wouldn't be able to... do whatever she does on the internet. So, you know, you are actually using up somebody's allotted bandwidth quota, and that's not a very nice thing to do. Also, some volume charging happens by the megabyte, and if you happen to be one of the unfortunate people who's on one of those sorts of plans, people stealing your wireless network access can cost you a lot of money. Okay, so you've got authentication, and you can have open, which is anybody can authenticate with the network, not necessarily associate, but they can authenticate. You have PSK. Anybody tell me what PSK stands for?
Passkey.
No.
Appreciate key.
Second guessing, he's got it. And then you have XEAP, which is Extensible Authentication Protocol. And then you have Cisco's version, which is LEAP, which is the Lightweight Extensible Authentication Protocol, which I think they just made it like that so that they could say LEAP. Okay, you have encryption, and you have WEP, the Wired Equivalency Protocol. You have WPA, and you have WPA2. WEP being somewhat insecure due to the fact that it uses a static pre-shared key that never changes. And you can use tools such as Aircrack and AircrackNG. And you can also use things like Kismet to get WEP keys out. And the usual time taken to extract a WEP key is around about 60 seconds, assuming there's traffic on the network, or the access point is beaconing, or you can con the access point into generating the traffic. So you're looking at a 60-second crack time for WEP.
Interesting.
However, some devices, like Braille notes, can only support WEP, and certain PDAs and stuff, especially the ones running Windows Mobile 5, they only tend to support WEP or 802.1x, which is a pain to set up. So sometimes you are stuck with using WEP for the backwards compatibility of your devices. Okay, now we have WPA, or Wi-Fi Protected Access, which is supposedly better than WEP, although apparently the original versions of WPA did use static keys, which wasn't very cool. But you also do have... you do have different implementations of WPA. You have the PSK, which is the pre-shared key, and you also have the TKIP. Actually, you've got your Temporal Key Integrity Protocol, which changes the keys after a certain amount of time has elapsed. And there are two forms of encryption. There are AES and CCP. So they're your different forms of WPA. And you've got to make sure that you select the right version of WPA, the right encryption protocol, the right keys, and make sure that all of the keys are keyed in on all the necessary places. Keep in mind that the if you're using a protocol with a pre-shared key, like WEP or WPA PSK, you must put the key into all wireless devices or they will not be able to communicate. The other thing to do is to filter suspicious traffic on the wireless network. That way you can stop traffic that really shouldn't be there from being there, and that's sort of part of the security thing, and that's all a bit sensible. You should plan your wireless network. Where are you going to put the access point? Are you going to put it in the bedroom? Are you going to put it in the basement? You need to plan where you're going to put the access point, where you're going to put the antennas, and where you're going to put the wireless stations. And in fact, sometimes people set their house up in such a way that if they've got a wireless card on their computer and the aerial's on the back of the computer, not only is the aerial on the back of the computer right near a brick wall, but they also try sending the signal back through their computer towards the access point. And because wireless travels in line of sight, that doesn't work very well, so not a good idea. One of the other things you should do, and a lot of people forget to do this, is back up and store the config files. Because you go and set all this stuff up, and then you don't bother saving the configuration out of it, and then when it all goes pear-shaped, it takes you a long time to get it back the way you had it originally. They do put backup config file options into router configuration dialogues for a reason, and that is so you can get things back up and running quickly.
I must check mine. I didn't know that.
I know the JTECs and the Billions and the Linksys.
I'm using the Netcom.
And the Netcoms. Yeah,
I just hate the user interface of that, but I will check it. Thank you, Kerry.
You are aware that a lot of the Netcoms actually have SSH support, and you can actually get into the command line.
Yes, it's got BusyBox. Yes, I will do that, and I might talk to you off lecture as to what I might do if I want to back it up on the command line.
I have no idea how to do it, because I don't have a Netcom, but there you go. You can do it through the web interface as well.
I'll have to RTFM it.
All right, that's the end of Chapter 7. Hurrah! Anybody got any questions before we move on to security? Any questions about wireless networks? And if you ask me where can I download Aircrack NG, I'll ignore you. You can go and Google it up. Although be warned that it only works on a specific set of wireless network cards, and it is for security testing your own networks only.
Hmm.
Does, however, run on the EAPS, ironically enough.
It does or it doesn't?
It does.
Okay,
any questions before we go on to security? Alrighty, Chapter 8 is security. And we're talking about various network security and stuff which we've been through a lot before, so I will summarise. You've got types of threats. You've got internal threats, which are disgruntled employees. And you've got external threats, which are either hackers or crackers coming in from the internet. And I would like to make a point here, and we used to get a lot of people ringing up the ISP going, somebody's trying to hack into my computer. Well, yes, they probably are, and yes, the internet is an unfriendly place. But just because your new whiz-bang 123 router with its DDoS, DOS, and anti-spoof, anti-smurf protection has screamed you are being attacked into the log files does not mean it is now time to call your ISP and panic. So be aware of that, and I'll come back to that later, but a lot of these intrusion detection and logging things are for your informational purposes, and often the ISP is not the one that should be doing stuff about these particular attacks. There are some attacks that the ISP can protect against, and there are certainly some that it can't. And often if we protected against all of them, the users would experience a decreased sense of security. Decreased ability to surf the internet. So if we put you all on private IP addresses behind network address translators, a lot of people would get very upset that applications such as eDonkey and Aries Galaxy wouldn't work. So you do have to strike a line between what your users want and the security of your users. Security incursions can cost people a lot of time and money. They're very expensive things, and they can make people go through a lot of work that they really didn't want to go through, and they can cost companies thousands, hundreds of thousands, and in some cases millions of dollars, especially if you steal one of their trade secrets on how to make those extra tasty donuts, for example.
Donuts.
They were nice too. I had two yummy iced donuts. Yeah, they had chocolate icing and hundreds and thousands on them. They were really nice.
I swear to God, I'm going to drown you.
Okay, so we're having data loss and data theft, which is a problem, and ID theft. Somebody can pretend to be you. And also disruption of service, which can happen due to DDoS or DOS attacks. DOS attacks are denial of service, and DDoS are distributed denial of service, where you get all these machines and you infect them with this stuff, and they go and attack other machines, and those things can be called botnets. So I see we're all watching the Olympic opening ceremony, are we?
Wasn't that just on 4 years ago?
Yeah, that's right.
But we have that different one tonight.
That's exactly right. Okay, internal and external threats. Oh, well, we won't be watching it. At least I hope we won't. At least I won't be watching it. If Gemma turns it on, I'll run and hide in my room.
No, we won't.
Good. In fact, well, I know it's going to be a marathon effort, but we're going to act as if the Olympics are not on. Okay, internal and external threats. It apparently, according to the FBI, who seems to know a bit about this sort of thing, internal threats make up 70% of the security problems that people faced. So you obviously got a lot of very disgruntled employees.
Yeah, it sort of says something, doesn't it?
It does. And you've got things like social engineering, where you ring up the help desk, or you ring up and you go, hello, this is Kerry from the help desk. Now, we need to do some upgrade and maintenance on your computer after work hours. And I was just wondering if you could provide me with your username and password and so that we can do that work this afternoon. Oh, look, no, don't worry. You can change them tomorrow morning when you log in. And you can be quite convincing, and you can convince... Sadly, in fact, in the early 80s, when gender roles were less roly, so to speak, you often had these guys ringing up these girls in call centres and convincing them to divulge this information about their usernames and passwords and various numbers and things, and they would sweet-talk these girls into giving them the exchange access codes and things. I'm sure it's all a lot more equal today, but that's what used to happen in the early 80s, and often the people didn't realise what information they were giving away, and that's why it's called social engineering. Me, I'll just settle for looking pathetic and asking very nicely if my wife will make me a cup of tea on the odd occasion. So, not really into social engineering myself. Okay, let's move on. We have phishing, vishing, and pretexting. Phishing, spelt with a PH, is where you go and you nick off with people's information like credit card numbers and stuff by having a spoofed website. Now, just topically, can anybody remember the big spoofed website that some Queensland bloke lost $47,000 on? It's very topical.
Wasn't it BeijingOlympics.com or something?
It was indeed.
I didn't think that was a spoof. I thought that was... I would have thought a spoof website was one that actually looked like a genuine website. There's nothing genuine about that.
He reckoned it.
It was a website specifically set up. Wasn't copying anybody else's. It was a fraud right from the start.
Interesting. Well, he lost his money to it, but he honestly thought it looked legitimate. It looked like a legitimate trading sales website.
I saw a picture of it on the TV, and they were using, you know, logos and trademarks and all sorts of stuff on there they had no right to be using. So I don't know whether you call that spoofing or not, because it wasn't like, you know, I sort of think of spoofing websites like you get a message from, you know, Westpac Bank saying, you know, log on here and confirm your details, and if you do, it looks like the Westpac website or the Commonwealth Bank website, and, you know, you have to know what you're doing to pick the difference.
Now, this is an interesting point. So do you want to say something, Geraldine? No, you're... that's right, Geraldine's just yawning and making her microphone crackle, so we'll move on. My lectures obviously must be thrilling. She's getting me back for yawning in hers the other day. Yeah, okay. Snope has a snoring, I think that says something. Although I bet you if we pulled out the remaining donuts, she'd wake up pretty soon.
Yawning through your own lectures, Kerry, so what's that say?
Well, this is it.
Good point, Chris.
It says that you're not here to keep me awake.
Well, he is, but he's...
Oh, surely all the sugar from those donuts would keep you awake.
No, sugar makes me tired, but let's, sugar makes me tired. Okay, now I was talking about something and I just... Oh, yes, this was an interesting point. You get this mail from the Westpac Bank, just to make sure I say that properly, and some people are really stupid. They go, oh, I just got this message from the Westpac Bank and it said I've got to, like, log in and 'cause my account's been suspended and so should I log in? And you go, who do you bank with? And they go, Bendigo. And you go, well, what do you reckon? Oh, but should I log in? Like, should I log into my bank and check?
No. Like that Skype one that was going around recently?
Oh, the other one is, I mean, people are incredibly gullible. You get gullible even. This one that said there was one that's saying FBI was trying to take over Facebook. Log in now and send a message to say that you don't want FBI taking over Facebook. The other one was, if you do not, if, you know, Skype is soon going to charge, if you do not, and they will be deactivating inactive accounts, so log into Skype now or your account will be deactivated.
Bloody lovely, isn't it? And I got one from Australian Tech. Oh, I wish I could tell you the amount of times I've been made into a multi-millionaire. But there was also a very bad one from the Australian
Bank account
tax
details.
The Australian Tax Office one that I got sent about 2 or 3 months ago. Oddly enough, at the time I was lodging a tax return, said that granted my refund or whatever they were trying to say, but please log in with your name and tax file number, naughty, to confirm these details and your cheque will be sent. Fortunately, I've got a reasonably good accountant and a hold on my business affairs, and I knew it to be wrong. And I saw that one mentioned on the AC website a few weeks after.
Yep, there's certainly a lot of very, very clever ones that go out there. I get a lot of messages from Mrs. Harley Majubi, who was some, you know, apparently she's only got, you know, $4 million to dispose of and something terrible is going to happen to her, but if I am the honourable person that she thinks that I am, that I will help, you know, for a small fee of, you know, N dollars, I will help dispose of this, you know, $4 million on things that I think are worthwhile. Well, unfortunately these mail addresses don't work, but I just email her back and go, look, you just donate it to Cavi, it'll all be good. But that doesn't seem to work. So, although, funnily enough, when we did get some money from the Cisco Learning Institute, this was earlier in the year, Ian had a bit of a chuckle because above it was a spam message, and below it was a spam message all claiming that he'd won the lottery, and he almost deleted the one from Cisco that said, we have given you, you know, money.
Hence the danger of it, because a lot of man hours are lost when people come into work, you know, going through the spams that have got through the spam filter, and with that runs the risk of deleting the legit messages.
Absolutely, and we talk about spam, and in fact, if you want to hear all about spam, I would guide you towards the Thursday chat by Elise Lonsdale about spam and junk mail, which of course yours truly was also involved in contributing.
With assistance from Kerry Hoth.
That's right, and you can send your non-tax deductible donation to, just kidding, what is the QCAT PayPal address? I can't remember now. Doesn't matter. But yeah, so yeah, you can
listen. Leg@iinet.net.au.
Yeah, right. Right, hey, blokes, let's spam him.
And you get these ones offering free, you know, like degrees and free degrees. You can be a doctor, you can be a computer person.
You mean I didn't have to do my master's?
Yeah, we didn't have to do Cisco. You just get one of these. In fact, the Chaser did a brilliant stunt last year where they went and signed up for one and put one of their dog's names in it and got the dog qualified as a doctor and took it into a hospital wanting to treat people. And they had the certificate.
Also, there are various other products that you can get that will keep you up all night, so to speak, if you went and bought them all. Well, they'll keep you awake.
You don't have any problems sleeping.
They do.
That's right. But there are, but there was quite, and this is something just a bit, this is a little story of don't do this. There was this woman that, I don't think the pills were specifically for that, but she bought some pills off the internet, and she took them. And they actually contained uranium, and it took her a month to die from the radiation poisoning. which would have been absolutely horrific for her. I believe she learned her lesson, but I think it should be a lesson to other people. Be careful what you buy and where you buy it from, because that would have been very unpleasant.
You'll never do that again.
No.
Would have been a very nasty way to die, that one.
Absolutely. Okay, and we have worms, Trojan horses, and viruses. Okay, we should know about these. Somebody tell me what a worm is.
Grab. A little thing that wriggles along the ground.
All right, something that replicates itself by using the address book, etc., of a computer that has it infected.
Yes, and it is a standalone program that does not need to attach to something else. And they are often freestanding and very destructive. Okay, and a virus.
Works in exactly the same way as a biological virus. It attaches itself to a cell, or in the case of a computer program, attaches itself to a computer program, thus making that program do something different.
Absolutely, and they can be very destructive as well. And Trojans.
Very important resource under this.
Trojans, a program that says it will do something when in fact it's actually doing something different.
Very important resource under SIS? I'm slightly mystified.
Okay.
I'm looking at the chat.
Full form of virus.
Sorry, I'm still not quite understanding. I must be missing a few key pieces. Well, the other term we do have to cover is a thing called vishing.
Yes, a
V-I.
Only, which can impact on Kamur.
That is where you wish you had a fish.
Ah, I think you're talking about viruses. Okay, yep, no problem. I hate to be a bearer of interesting news, but there were actually viruses that could be transferred into printers. So it wasn't just computers. There was actually virus PostScript code that could actually go through and trash all your laser printers. Not a very pleasant thing to be doing, but there you have it. Okay, vishing is where you steal information using voice over IP. You convince people into calling a particular number and feeding in their bank card numbers and things, and their credit card numbers. Now, no ideas, Mr. Legg. Don't try and attack our VoIP and get us to feed in our credit card numbers. It's not going to work.
How the heck does
come
that
on,
work?
Well, it's in the notes. Oh, I haven't heard a lot of it either, but that's about all it says about it. So you just sort of fool people into... And it sort of pretends to be a voicemail box or something that asks you for numbers and things, and you just feed them in, and it steals the information.
Okay.
Okay, now we have things like spyware, tracking cookies, and pop-ups. Pop-up cookie. No.
You Sesame Street freak.
Okay, spyware is stuff that gets loaded onto your computer, and it then goes and tries and borrows account numbers and stuff and goes and calls things or sends it back to a particular website or whatever. There are quite a number of those key loggers and things that can get onto your computer. And they're also, back in the days of modems, there used to be these dialers that would show you girls doing naughty things at only $10 or $15 a minute. And if you had one of these things installed on your computer would dial up these websites, and you would obviously obtain this style of entertainment. But often the dialers were very difficult to uninstall.
Oh, I can tell you an interesting story about that when I was doing help desk support for an internet service provider a few years ago.
You don't, Chris.
But what am I going to spend all these stolen credit card numbers on?
Oh, I don't know. You'll think of something. You can take Gemma out for dinner or something. Yes, the story. You were telling us a story about one of those, Elise.
Yeah, I was doing some help desk support for Hotkey, who I'm still with, but I had this annoying customer who kept on ringing me up, and he told me about these dialers that, you know, that somehow got onto his computer, and I said, yeah, and at that time I hadn't heard of them. And I said, well, you know, you dial into the normal, you know, number, blah, 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 whatever the number was at the time, and off you go, and he said, oh, no, it's something that I installed, we installed, and basically, it came out that it was exactly that, and he goes, oh, because he was trying to ring us up, blaming us that we weren't able to give him the internet service that he believed he should get from us, because it was either slow or he couldn't get his email or whatever the problem was. And I said, he goes, oh, how did that get on my computer? And I said, I don't know, I don't want to know, and I don't care. It sounds nasty to me. And I referred him to the manager, who consequently told him the same thing. He didn't know, care, or want to be bothered with it.
Now, this raises an interesting issue of ethics and morality, and I'm not talking about the girls that you can see for $15 a minute. What I'm talking about is the responsibility that ISPs have to their clients. Well, I'm not touching the other one with a 20-foot pole. I'm just, you know, moving right along and talking about the internet. Are the internet service providers supposed to protect you from these nasties? And how much support should your internet service provider provide you removing these things from your system if you got it off their service? And a lot of the internet service providers have actually washed their hands of it completely and say none at all. Your antivirus, your problem.
Well, exactly. And it turned out, I think he was quite embarrassed when he realised what he inadvertently, because he was a very, very novice user with a capital N. And I think he was very, very embarrassed when Mario and I worked out exactly what had happened.
Well, actually, we had a situation once where the news server stopped working. Well, at least we got a customer who rang and told us that the news server had stopped working. And we sort of said, oh, it seems to be working for us. What sort of news groups were you reading? And there was this big, long silence at the other end of the phone. And he goes, just some news groups? I'm like, can you give us an example? He's like, no. I'm like, oh, well, I'm sorry, sir, we can't fix it. We did go back through the logs, and yes, some of the news groups he had been reading probably wouldn't have been ones that he should be giving as an example. So you often find yourself in quite interesting moral dilemmas there as far as, you know, what service you do provide and what service you do. And this is an interesting problem because a lot of people, and this is sort of getting into the ethics of things here a bit, but a lot of people don't think it was their fault that they got a virus. It wasn't my fault I got a virus. It wasn't me who did it. It was my sister's friend and his flash drive or her flash drive. And why should I have to pay for something that I didn't do? And I don't know whether, as Elise would know and a number of us on here would know, disinfecting people's computers from viruses, adware, spyware and pop-ups and things can work out quite expensive if you need to get a computer technician over to do it. Although, obviously, Chris does it at a bargain price. No, just kidding. But it can be quite expensive and time-consuming.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, they'll blame the ISP because they happened to be logged on last night to the internet when it happened or something like that. And it's definitely, the onus is on you. And you have to be aware of it. And I do tell people that.
Well, I actually said this to this girl once, and it was quite a provocative thing to say to her. It was quite a provocative thing to say to her. I sort of said to her, "Do you have antivirus on your computer?" And she said, "No, I don't." And I said, "Oh, okay. Well, you should." And she goes, "Oh, but that costs money." I said, "So, are you going to go down to the pub and pick up the first bloke you can meet and drag him home and do things with him no matter what?" And she said, "No, I will not. How dare you?" I said, "Well, okay, fair enough, but are you going to take your computer on the internet without antivirus software?" And she went, "Yeah, all right, you've made your point."
Well done.
Now, what if she'd said yes, Gary?
Well, I would have made sure I had a phone number. Okay.
You have known what her local pub was.
Yeah, exactly. It was an interesting comparison. And, I mean, it was a very graphic thing to say to somebody, but it really made the issue poignant to them. To sort of say, look, if you take a computer onto the internet that's unprotected and you know, it will be attacked and it will be compromised and bad things will happen to it. And it's the same level of responsibility that you should take for you that you should take over your computer. Okay. The other thing they mention in this chapter is that you should certainly have security policies, and you should make sure that everybody has read, signed, and know what the security policy is. For example, we have a friend, and I won't say who it is, who complains because her work won't let her use iTunes. Even if she does purchase the songs and stuff, they won't let her connect her iPod to her work computer and sync contacts and stuff, and it's a real pain. But there are reasons why you do that. There are actually some places now who won't let you take flash drives in, and they've actually disabled all the USB ports so that you do not plug flash drives onto computers.
Yeah.
In fact, a lot of the workstations, for example, at the ATO, the Australian Tax Office, are diskless workstations, and they do not have accessible USB ports, and they do not have CD-ROM drives, and they do not have floppy drives.
Makes a lot of sense in those types of environments, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And you should apply all the latest patches and updates to your software once you've made sure bad things, TM, are not going to happen. Anybody who goes out and grabs the Windows updates that come down on Patch Tuesday and loads them onto the computer like 2 minutes after they come out, you get what you ask for, and that is some nasty surprises. So be aware and have a look at something like, I don't know, Windows Secrets is a good one. There are other ones on the web that will tell you what the patches are going to do, and any known incompatibilities that you might have before you go and roll these patches out onto systems. We have had situations where automatic updates have made the machine inoperable. And in fact, one of the classic examples of this, and obviously it was done to people who, shall we say, had not followed the recommended purchasing procedure, Windows Genuine Advantage caused a lot of people a lot of grief.
Indeed.
And interestingly enough, if you've read the Microsoft License Agreement, and not a lot of people have, Microsoft actually reserved the right to render your computer inoperable if they detect you are running pirated, illegal, or unlicensed software. And apparently that's a right they can have over you. They can just stop your computer from working with their software so that you have to take their software off and put something else on.
Or Bill Gates comes down with a big sledgehammer to your house.
I have a sledgehammer, and I'm about to pound your computer into atoms. No, I don't think Bill Gates does that.
That's a very good imitation. No, he just sends the lawyers instead.
Yeah, quite possibly. Look, I don't think Bill Gates does... Oh, very good. Well, I've got some WD-40 for Rusty Gates. Who is Rusty Gates?
The Arrow Computers thing.
The Arrow Computers guy.
Oh, I do remember that.
And he always tries to sell you a dual core.
That's right. It's a bit difficult to explain. There is a local computer store that has an ad, and on the ad there is this character called Rusty Gates that's always trying to sell you a dual core and stuff, and he works for Arrow Computing. Yes.
Arrow.
Okay, that's why I didn't get it. This is a Perth thing, is it?
Arrow.
It's like the Perth computer mob that are called Abacus, and their slogan is "You can count on us."
Oh my god!
Yes, Rusty Gates here drives you absolutely mad every time you hear him. You want to throttle a television.
And remember, there's no bill for advice at Arrow.
I haven't actually seen this.
You're lucky.
I'll pick it on the Arrow Computers website if you're really desperate.
I'll have to have a look, or somebody will put them up on YouTube. Yeah, so there you go, arrow.com.au, you can go and watch Rusty Gates. But as I said, I've got some WD-40 for Rusty, and that should sort him out. That is actually the end of today's lecture. Does anybody have any questions? Probably worth mentioning, actually. The curriculum makes mention of a couple of useful programs. One of them is Spybot Search and Destroy. Which does have a blind user mode, and once you figure out how to use it, it's actually quite good. It's often not as up-to-date as some of the commercial spyware offerings, but you do get what you pay for. And they also make mention of AVG free in antivirus, which does have some limitations, but it is free. And one of the challenges for blind people is to figure out an antivirus software that is accessible, usable, and functional. And apparently AVG we use, we find it very good. There is also Avast, although Avast will tend to turn off your C$ and D$ network shares without asking you, so be aware of that, and it does a few other interesting things. And there is also Free AV, but I'm not sure how accessible that is. And there is also a free version of F-Secure is another one. Although the actual pay version of F-Secure is quite good. And then there's NOD32, which apparently nags you until you pay for it. And I think the other thing to keep in mind here is that although you can get a lot of...
as well, which is pretty good.
Spyware Doctor's not bad either.
Well, we had, that was the thing that brought, yeah, it was Spyware Doctor that brought Mary's laptop to its knees.
Yeah, it's working fine on mine.
Yeah, yours was a bit faster than hers. That was the one we, remember that one we brought in fixed in ITU that day? Peter's laptop? Mary and Peter's laptop?
Mary and Peter's laptop?
Is that the one that you had on the recording?
Yeah, it was Spyware Doctor that was finishing it off.
Yeah. Okay, because at the time, either I didn't listen to the whole session or you weren't aware of it, but I didn't seem to remember you actually knowing about that at the time, you know, the recording.
I'm not sure whether we'd absolutely tracked it down, but we were sort of narrowing things down and using the task manager with extreme prejudice to kill things.
But it just goes to show you can spend hours looking for these things, and you know, why is my client's computer running slow? And it can be something silly like that.
Well, this is the thing, and I think the other thing you've got to keep in mind, and a lot of the clients certainly keep this in mind, is why is my computer running slow and why is my bank account emptying so quickly? And this is why you should put these things on your computer before you have trouble, rather than having to pay somebody to clean them up, because it really is time-consuming and annoying work to try and get rid of all these dialers, trojans, keyloggers, and all sorts of things off computers. And that's why you should have a good firewall, you should have a good antivirus, and you should have a good anti-spyware solution. And finding that is a bit of a challenge, although there is the security baseline on Windows Secrets, although some of it is inaccessible. And no, we don't actually tell you which ones you definitely should be using as part of this course, and we do not support people's individual computers, I'm afraid, because we don't have the time. But you may glean some interesting information from sifting through the mailing list archives on the questions that we have answered for people in the past, and that sort of thing, so keep that in mind. There are also firewalls, personal firewalls and things that can cause more problems than they can solve, which I'm sure Dean will remember quite well, and quite a number of our other students have had nasty...
Yes, unfortunately.
And in fact, that one stopped him from accessing the Cisco site for about 3 weeks.
Yeah, bloody Norton's heap of crap, throw them in the bin.
And of course, we cannot endorse or not endorse a particular brand, but that particular one that was just mentioned is not one of our favourites either.
Yeah, we've been dissing D-Link all lecture.
I've been dissing D-Link, you haven't.
That's what I said.
I thought you said we have. I said I have, you haven't.
Yeah, but I haven't defended it either.
No, well, that's right. But, no, still, look, I mean, if they want to come and sue us for billions and billions of dollars, we don't have it, and blood out of a stone, and B, I reckon their switches won't even hold up to sending the email out, so we should be pretty safe. All right, here endeth today's lecture. No, if we've got no more questions in about 10 or 15 seconds, we'll stop recording.